The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly. I'm Ollie Mann. We are back, sunburned, broke, and hungover from our summer break. And just as at the beginning of any school term, we are hitting the books. E-books, in point of fact, to discover how digital reading and tablets more broadly are affecting our ability to read as we grow up. More kids than ever now have access to a tablet. Screen time has become a battleground in family life. But is that a threat to children's literacy? Do the myriad distractions of digital reading damage their ability to concentrate? Or could inventive ebooks and reading apps actually encourage young people to take up reading? Joining me and my Guardian panel today are Peter Robinson, the head of research at Dubbit, a company specializing in digital entertainment for kids, and Asi Sharabi, who launched the children's storytelling startup Lost My Name. What will happen next? When you hear ping, turn the page. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Well, here's an eye-popping stat to hook you in to our story today. In the UK, 4 years ago, just 7% of under 15-year-olds had access to a tablet. By last year, that had swollen to over 70%. Naysayers fear that all that screen time has a detrimental effect on children's ability to concentrate on long-form reading. But of course, a lot of what these kids are doing on those tablets is effectively reading. So is it such a bad thing? Well, joining me on our Guardian panel this week is Stuart Dredge, who's recently written a piece about this very phenomenon, Julia Eccleshare, our children's books editor, and our games editor, Keith Stewart. Stuart Dredge, in researching this piece that you've written for The Guardian, I guess like many a concerned parent, you ploughed into the statistics on this. So tell us, are screens better or worse than print when it comes to helping children to read? What does the science say?
Well, the honest answer after a week of trying it, I still no idea really, but it's all the researchers' fault rather than mine, hopefully. Basically, I came into this as a parent and journalist who writes about children's apps regularly, and I often get people in the comments section saying, "This is dreadful, it's destroying reading, children should have books, not tablets." And I just wanted to step back and not be defensive about that, but sort of look into it and say, well, are they true? Is it right? What's happening here and what are the trends? So there were two kind of questions I tried to get the bottom of. One was, are children reading less? And it's completely contradictory evidence. There's some stuff in the US suggesting they are reading less. There's some stuff in the UK suggesting they're reading more. So that's kind of inconclusive. But then when you look at the research on actually how screens compare to printed books for reading, so are they better or worse? There's a load of studies from about 10 years ago into kind of reading on screen in the days when they were called VDUs, and it's adults reading on computer screens. And there's findings that maybe they don't remember as much or understand as much, but they don't apply to children today who've grown up with tablets. So they're kind of out of date. So basically, yeah, no one quite knows that there's no kind of definitive proof either way.
Okay, so some debate about whether reading on tablets is beneficial or not, and whether it counts as reading. What everyone agrees on, it seems to me, even the people who develop e-reading platforms and apps, is that reading traditional books is also good, that one shouldn't replace the other. Is there any evidence that says children now are turning away from, you know, what people listening to this think of as traditional books and onto purely digital forms?
Again, well, not much on whether one is affecting the other. In a sense, the people I talked to suggested that actually what's being hurt is TV. So children, when they get screen time, they're choosing to spend it on tablets rather than TVs a bit. But they're still watching a lot of TV and still reading. But yeah, I mean, the more I went on with this, the more the feature and my thoughts became more about people and not technology. So this idea of actually children fall in love with reading, not because they haven't got a tablet, but because they read with their parents. It's a kind of shared activity, this idea of co-reading. And that's not something that has to be impacted by tablets. If you're a parent and if you can find the time, and if you have the time to kind of sit down with your child and read to them and eventually read with them or be read to by them, that's kind of the important thing. And once you start thinking about that, it's less of a worry what your kids are doing on tablets. They might play Angry Birds for 20 minutes before dinner, for example. But then if you're reading them for half an hour at bedtime, those things coexist quite happily. And so that was quite positive. It's about people and not technology. It's about what you do as a parent.
Yes. And another idea that jumped out to me from your article is that as much as it is about technology, you know, all this new stuff, well, the old stuff is also about technology. Books are a kind of technology. It's just they've had centuries to evolve. And Julia, you've been children's books editor for The Guardian for 15 years now. How have you seen that technology, paper books, evolve in the last decade or so?
Well, paper books are evolving all the time, and the rise of pop-ups, for example, was very exciting when it first happened. The following them, you know, interactive books of all different kinds. Then you get narrative, which can be changed, so you get things like the choose your own adventure stories. I mean, books are not static. They're not sitting there being exactly what they were when the printing press was first invented. But just to go back to kind of the threats to reading, I think what's kind of curious is if you ask me over the last 15 years about what's happened to books, books have been seeing off these other threats as they're always seen. Since, you know, the first TV for children, which was the biggest threat originally. And they shouldn't be seen in polar, they shouldn't be seen as opposites. This is a continuum. This is all about accessing story in a number of different ways. And, you know, reading on a screen is still accessing a story. And it's also odd to kind of separate children out from adults here. We all read much more dipping in and dipping out. I mean, I certainly do. I was thinking the other day, I rarely get to the end of something. This isn't something that only children are doing. We're all learning to read in different ways. And as far as I can see, books are holding up incredibly well. The book market is stronger. The children's book market is stronger than it's ever been. It's going up 9% a year in terms of volume of sales. That says children are still reading books. So they're not reading. And if they're reading on their devices, that probably means they think reading is a slightly cooler activity. And they do it as well as reading books.
Was there a time where the major book publishers were frightened? You use the word threat. Did they see this as a threat, and how did they deal with it? Have they done interesting, innovative things?
Yeah, publishers were frightened of TV. They were frightened of video. You know, they've been frightened always by other technologies. The worst mistake they make is when they try and make the book as like that other technology as possible. And it was a bad time in publishing when children's books tried to replicate children's TV and be very sort of all smiles and cheerful and sort of lost their integrity. And now publishers are, of course, they're publishing their books in different formats. They're publishing ebooks, they're sometimes publishing enhanced ebooks, and they're seeing that the technology can allow them to have a print book and turn it into something that has some additionality. If you look at picture book apps, they're perhaps the most interesting area where the technology has really begun to work. And children still love picture books. And I think the point about sharing a book with your children remains absolutely key to this whole thing. And parents and children still share picture books. But the child on his own may much prefer, all two-year-olds can swipe. I mean, and the two-year-old may prefer doing that with his finger than and also looking at the puzzle that goes with that book or how you name the animals or whatever it may be. So publishers are being very creative with it. But they see it as the story, as the file of importance, and how you then spread it around the readers, whether it's in print or on screen, is what matters.
And Keith, games get a bit of a bad press. There's probably not many parents listening to this who will proudly boast that their children spend hours gaming. But when it comes to children's literacy levels, is it similar to what Julia said? Is there a way of delivering through the gaming mechanic the same exposure to words and reading, and it has an educational value?
Yeah, definitely. As Stuart Dredge said earlier, often when he writes about apps, he does get these comments that say, oh, children should be outside. And the same thing happens to me when I write about video games. Often, like when it gets on the front page of The Guardian, and often there'll be comments to say, oh, kids shouldn't be on screens, they should be outside running around, or they should be reading books. But video games, since the very beginning, have used interactive fictions as a really important part. So if you go back to sort of the early 80s, you got video games which were basically just text-based. Things like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, The Hobbit. They were text-based adventures, which, you know, encouraged me as a young child then to then seek out the original source texts. And I started reading The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings because I played these games. But now we have on iPad, we have some very, very intricate and very beautiful interactive text-based adventures, which have graphics as well. So it's more kind of interactive. So things like 80 Days, which is a sort of an illustrated text adventure based around Jules Verne's book, in which you're kind of exploring the world and traveling over the world. But as you're doing it, you're reading the story, a version of Jules Verne's story. But there's also kind of an asset management game attached to it. So you have to do all of his packing, and you have to buy things in the towns that you visit and sell them on, and to allow you to keep going on your journey. So there, lots and lots of games merge fiction with interactivity in really interesting, accessible ways.
But some of that sounds almost like it's been developed so that adults sitting around at The Guardian can say, oh, isn't this great for my kids? I mean, as a child, I was always very resistant to being given my medicine in that way. I remember even Sesame Street finding it a bit frustrating where they get to that bit where they teach you about a letter, because I knew I was being preached to and I just wanted to see Oscar the Grouch. I mean, do children really enjoy playing those games in the same way as they enjoy playing the ones where you just press a button repeatedly and punch someone?
Yeah, absolutely, because children are intelligent and curious about the world. So, you know, the games that I write about and I explore and the ones that I play with my children aren't educational apps in that sense. They're not saying, here's some words to read and you might learn when you do. They don't work in that way. They use text as just simply a game mechanic. So, there's a whole genre of games at the moment, interactive fiction games made on a platform called Twine, which is very easy to use, very easy to make your own games. And it's allowed a kind of a new form of storytelling, in that people can tell their own autobiographical stories through Twine games, then share them with other people. And these are teenagers talking to other teenagers in a very accessible, interesting, interactive way. So no, it's not really about medicine at all. It's about the fact that text can be an interactive mechanic, just like anything else, just like images, just like graphics, just like guns.
And Stuart, you mentioned as well, just like Keith did, this kind of either-or mentality that the commenters will often say, your children should be outside playing, as if by letting them play on a tablet, they're some kind of millennial Rapunzel locked up in a castle with an iPad. How do you get the balance right in conclusion, making sure that they actually get a bit of everything? I mean, in other words, if they're spending more time with their iPad or whatever, what activity is that taking time out of? I mean, that's the balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough one, I think, because you end up coming down to limits and talking about screen time limits and all these things that parents spend a lot of time worrying about how much time it's on. But actually, I think, to come back to something Julia said about story, I think that's really at the heart of a lot of this. If children love stories, they'll find ways to kind of to read those stories and to play those stories and to tell those stories well, however they're playing. So, I mean, I think about my kids, and I'm not putting them up as like, I'm an amazing parent and they're the ultimate well, but they seem to have quite a healthy balance, and they'll play some games on the iPad. They'll play Minecraft and a thing called World of Warriors. But then they'll go in the garden and act out those things and stories from those worlds, and they'll read in bed. And a lot of it all comes down to they love making up their own stories, and they love being told stories. And they take those to whatever they're doing. Maybe we worry a bit too much that they're just going to sit there and passively consume, when in fact what they want more than anything is to have great stories and to make up their own.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the electronic reading has given to children is a chance to make their own stories and to add to stories, and story is a very fluid form. I'm sure all these arguments happened when, you know, the first books came out in print and everyone said, oh my God, now they're not told, now they'll be this, now they'll be that. Change is happening, and children are going to do all sorts of different things. And one also has to remember that pejoratively, when, you know, people used to talk about children and reading, they'd describe them as bookworms, shut away with a book. You know, reading can be seen quite negatively. But now we've built it up as the sort of holy grail. And of course, I think reading is a wonderful thing to do, and I think children can get a lot of pleasure out of it. But whether they get that story through watching it on a film, playing at a game, I think games are tremendously good for teaching children the structure of story, because that sort of quest element, that, you know, wandering through different scenery, all of those things are very imaginative and very creative and at the heart of what every child gets when they get back to a story.
So, could digital books actually be an opportunity to encourage children to read more? Well, Peter Robinson is the head of research at Dubbit, a company that specialises in digital entertainment for kids. And Peter, what does your research tell us about how children interact with apps versus books?
So a lot of the research we do is testing new pieces of content, whether that be a digital piece of content like an app or a physical like a print book. And when we're measuring how good that piece of content is, we measure it against two different kind of parameters. One is the comprehension. Do children actually understand the message that's being delivered to them? The second is, does it engage them? And I would say from the research that we've been doing over the last couple of years, digital technology is as effective at delivering the comprehension metric and the engagement metric as other platforms. So we know that digital can deliver good content. We know that it can have a positive impact on how children kind of engage with that message. So our research at the moment would suggest that digital is as effective a medium platform as delivering a message as other platforms.
And yet, you know, anecdotally, we know that parents say, I give my child the tablet and they will choose to watch CBeebies, they'll choose to play Peppa Pig rather than read an ebook. So even if they're finding the book is engaging, that's not the content they'll choose. Why is that?
Because there's a lot of good CBeebies and a lot of good Peppa Pig content. I think that comes down to the comment that was made earlier, which is it's about the content and the quality of the content. And that's true on tablets. We tend to find that the two main things that kids will do on a tablet are watch video and play games. So those kind of walk hand in hand very, very high in terms of kids' wish list. Reading is further down. Because kids still use reading for different occasions, you know, reading is something perhaps they do before they go to bed, in which case they might not be using a tablet. They might be using something which is a bit more sit back and passive, and reading for them might be that. So it's very much an occasion-based thing. And I think at the moment it's still a case of video and gaming work really well on tablets.
I just wonder if to try and up the competition, I suppose, with all of those highly visual apps that they can play with instead, whether sometimes in e-publishing there's a tendency for the apps aimed at kids to become more and more interactive, more and more elaborate, and then it ceases in a sense to be as much about reading at all.
I think that's really true. I remember the first interactive apps that we tested where a page was read and then something happened at the end of that page being read. The kids stopped listening to what was being read and started waiting for the click, the button they could press at the end of it. And it totally detracted from the story that was being told. I think it's the same with any piece of content. It has to make sense. And one of the messages that we pass out there a lot is just keep it simple. Don't try and do something too fancy, because the chances are kids won't understand why it's really happening. And I think kids are very, very cynical and very, very good at spotting things that have been done because the person thought it should be done, rather than done because there was a reason for it being done.
And when the ratio changes in that way, I mean, Julia, do you think reading small amounts of text is as beneficial, to use that word, as reading a page, for example, of text?
I mean, I think there are two things. There's talking about literacy and whether we're getting children reading at all, and that means any kind of reading. And then there's what fully losing yourself in a story can do, and that whole experience, which, you know, real readers understand completely about going on the journey with the book and all of those sorts of things. So it would be a huge shame if children didn't have that. But so I think, you know, on the one hand, I think, yes, electronic reading is very good for the first. I think it does. I think it has improved literacy, as I think texting has. I mean, everybody is having to use print all the time, whether they like it or not. You can't avoid printed words, however you adapt them for yourself. As for the longer story, I don't think we've got any evidence that children are not still wanting to get lost in a book. I mean, we wouldn't have the kind of book sales we've got. We wouldn't have them. Why are they all reading David Williams, The Wimpy Kid, Horrid Henry when they're, you know, 6 to 8, and then all the YA stuff when they're 12 plus? They wouldn't read if they didn't want that whole immersive experience that a book gives them. And they can do that on an e-book, but they're probably less likely to. I mean, I think the point about it comes quite low down the list of activities you might do with a tablet is because reading probably happens at different times and in different ways. It's not that they don't actually want to read.
So obviously when the likes of Peter are putting together their interactive apps for kids, they're looking at the lessons from what Julia was saying in terms of how children read books. Keith, do you think they're looking as well at video games, or should be?
Yeah, I think so. What Julia said about how we judge or how we perceive the way that children look at and read books and how we judge the term literacy is quite interesting. And one of the roles that video games have got and interactive fiction has got is allowing children or giving children a chance to think about text in a different way. In video games, especially in things like Device 6, which is a great game by a Swedish company called Simogo, which is on iPad and uses text as something which you actually manipulate to tell the stories. You move the text around and interpret it on the page in quite a kind of haptic, tactile way. I think what that's doing is teaching children, or in fact all adventure games teach children, that text is something, stories are something to investigate and explore. It's not a passive experience reading a text. It's something to interrogate. I think games can really help children develop that understanding very early. Like my son has, my seven-year-old son has grown up playing lots of interactive games and interactive fiction on his iPad or on my iPad. And now he's reading Harry Potter, and he's reading it voraciously. And I don't know this would have happened anyway, but he's asking lots of questions about the characters and their motivations and the story world in a way that I feel has been informed by his interaction with games. So I think games have kind of taught him a language of investigating fiction that he might not, that it might have taken him years to learn in other ways, which I think is really interesting.
Well, print clearly isn't dead yet. Coming up, I'll be talking to one of the co-founders behind a children's publishing startup that has recently attracted investment from Google Ventures to the tune of $9 million. That's next.
If you run a mobile business, you need a payment solution that's simple, safe, and seamless. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more across any platform. With superior fraud protection, customer service and fast payouts, it's the full stack payment solution for your business. To learn more and for your first £30,000 of transactions fee free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
Now, how is the digital revolution affecting more traditional print publishers? Joining me now is one of the co-founders of a recent success story in the children's book industry. Asi Sharabi was one of the three dads and an uncle, and no, that's not a sitcom, who founded the company Lost My Name 2 years ago. Since then, he's had over 600,000 sales of the book, secured funding from Piers Linney on Dragon's Den, and $9 million from Google Ventures. So from those figures, it doesn't look like the printed book is going anywhere. Asi, tell us the idea behind the book and also why a tech company would want to invest in a paper product.
So the first product, the Lost My Name book, or the little boy who lost his name, or the little girl who lost her name, is an adventure story about a little boy or little girl who woke up one morning and the name was gone. So they embark on this courageous adventure to find the name. And then from this point onward, every book is unique and, as we like to say, almost as wonderful as the child it is being made for, because the narrative follows the letters of the child name. So Ollie will have a very, very different book from Keith or from Asi, and Julia will have a very, very different book from Elena, because the characters that they will meet, the interactions that they will have are all very different, and they're tailored to the child's name.
Right, okay. So people might be listening to this thinking, well, hold on, I grew up in the 70s or 80s and I had a book like that. What's different about the books that you're making now, in technological terms especially, to the books that were personalised, you know, decades ago?
So they were indeed. I think the personalised book have been in the market, that's what we learned, for over 40 years now. But I think that they were never really treated as a serious creative canvas, or definitely not as a technology playground that we're looking at them. You know, it all started when I got one of them for my daughter, and I looked at them, and that kind of, you know, warm and fuzzy feeling of seeing my daughters in a book lasted exactly like 1.5 seconds until I realized that I'm completely underwhelmed by everything about this book. And we thought, like, hey, can we do something better? Because there's surely an interesting opportunity there. And the first thing that we wanted to try to deliver on is that can we genuinely make a different book for every child that will be personalized around a specific parameter, and we'll create this, you know, deeper engagement, or like, you know, very kind of contextualized experience for the child who is reading it.
So the reason that Google are interested in it is because it's a purely web-based thing, right? You get a paper book at the end of it, but you order it online and then it gets printed and distributed effectively by a tech company.
It is. I mean, you know, we are a technology company that happens to make physical books.
Which then prompts the predictable question, why don't you do an ebook then?
Because I think that people respond so much better to the fact that it is a physical book, and the fact that it is a very unique product that lives on the intersection of digital and physical. I think that's what makes it so unique. Because of the context of the book, it's very much a gift. It's a keepsake. And while we like to kind of, you know, hoard on digital apps and experiences, A physical thing is much more of a keepsake than a digital artifact. And I think that people really, really like that feel and touch, and the physicality of the book is something that people respond really well to.
What I'm saying is, are you going to be the sole person on this podcast to say you actually don't like ebooks and you don't iPad apps?
I am. as a technologist, you know, I think that I can say that. And as a father to a, you know, 7, 5, and 2 years old, I don't think that picture books lend themselves really well to the screen. I think that there are some lovely interactive storybooks and they're fine, but there's something, I think that the fact that the iPad is a multi-purpose device and there's so many other things in this device. Kids know that when they get that that iPad, they will opt for the, you know, the more interactive, the more kind of bells and whistles. And I think that the fact that there's you know, on probably on the average iPad, probably like 100 different games, makes the experience of kids like quite erratic. They jump from an experience to experience, and I think that in this regard, books when it's bedtime, when there's no screen, when there's no, you know, enough, like when there's not too many choices around there, there's no choice overload, when it's just this old technology, old-fashioned technology, but it's still quite engaging because there's mommy or daddy's funny voices, and a space for the child to just get a little bit deeper into the narrative, into the story, than an iPod will allow you.
Stuart, does he have a point when it comes to distraction and concentration? You know, it is true, isn't it? I was reading your piece on the Guardian website on my tablet on the way here on the train, and I kept getting distracted by the fact that my emails kept popping up whilst I was reading. If I was 8 years old, I'm defenceless against that distraction, aren't I?
I think so. Although one of the things that came out of my feature is that I think adults have got a much bigger problem with this. We constantly, like you say, our email distracts us, Twitter distracts us, Facebook and so on. So, yeah, I think what Julia said, this idea of losing yourself in a story. And sometimes on these devices, it can be hard to lose yourself, partly because something might pop up, although children hopefully don't have emails popping up quite as much as us. But yeah, also the kind of the knowledge, I think, that you're only ever sort of a click of the home screen button and they tap on their app away from something else. And the one thing that came out of this feature that did actually hit home with me, even though I am quite a geek, was this idea of sometimes reading isn't easy. Sometimes you might struggle with words or there might be something that's difficult. And on a tablet, I think children can say, oh, you know what, I'm going to go and play Angry Birds because it's easier. So I think there is definitely something there. And that's why I think if you're putting your faith in tablets as the only place your children would be, it'd be a problem, which is where these like I think we're saying, these moments of sitting down and sharing with your parent later on when there isn't a tablet in view are so important.
Does this somewhat come down to whether you're a responsible parent, though, Asi? I mean, if you're a parent who does co-reading with your child with a tablet computer, does that really make any difference to whether you're using a book or a tablet?
Probably not. If you will dedicate that that time, that bonding moment, and allow your child the space to get lost in a story or to really kind of, you know, deeply engage with the narrative, I don't think that there's an issue.
And just one thing that just popped into my head actually whilst we were discussing all this, Julia, and I'd like to know what you think about this, is the commercial element inevitably of some of these electronic products. You know, when you buy a paper book, and yes, some of them clearly are tied into TV programs and designed to sell you merchandise and all the rest, but when you buy a paper book as a parent, you've spent your money, you've got your product. With most of these digital products, all the way through, the narrative is essentially trying to lure you in to spend another $2.99 and find out what happens next. Is that worrying, that commercial influence of, you know, whichever corporation is shoving this content into your children's brains?
Well, I don't think you'd put the two together. I mean, I think they're different things. I mean, when you're a parent buying a picture book, and I absolutely take your point about picture books, I think they are the area where I think the parent and child, I mean, you need the adult to make the book work for a pre-reading child. But actually, I think there's something about the book itself that's very important for the child to have in their hand. And they go back and it's their book. The tablet's not theirs in the same sort of way. They don't have that ownership. It's probably somebody else's tablet and they're allowed time on it. I think one of the things that we know better than anything else is that picture books have an incredible lasting value. They get passed down from, you know, not one but two generations. They are the books that are most treasured in the family home. I don't think we're going to see a time soon when people are going to be fighting over who inherits the app of a picture book, whereas they'll still go on fighting over who inherits the picture book.
Okay, look, I should finally, I suppose, wrap up just by asking you. You said you were a parent, Keith.
Yes.
Do your kids prefer electronic books or do they prefer paper books? Where are we at in 2015?
I think it's balanced. They're, my young son Albie is loving reading Harry Potter with a book, and he gets that sense of ownership, which is what Julia spoke about. That is his book and he owns it, and he marks the pages off when he's read them. It's his physical artifact, and that's wonderful. But he's just as enthusiastic about other things, and I think that's going to be the case for many years.
And Julia, in your view, is it really 50-50, or do you think children secretly prefer the electronic entertainment on offer?
Well, I think they love the electronic entertainment, but I think they'll go back to books. And I think the point about having that book, I mean, the one thing kids want to be able to do when they go to school, if we look at reading in the school context, is read a chapter book, and they want to show you how they're reading it, and they mark off the pages. So I really don't think the book is dying. I really think children are going to go on wanting to read the book. If we think of books as technology, and they are technology, they were one technology, and they're part of this continuum, and they're not going to go away.
Choose Your Own Adventure is dead, though, isn't it, in paper form?
No.
Or does that no, is that still going?
Yeah.
Good God, you learn something new every day, don't you? Thank you very much to my brilliant panel, Julia Eccleshare, the children's books editor, Keith Stewart, the games editor, and Stuart Dredge from our tech desk, and also to my guest, Peter Robinson, head of research at Rubit, and Assi Sharabi, the founder of Lost My Name. I've been Ollie Mann. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Ollie with a Y, M-A-N-N. The producer is Alana Chance. Until next week, bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.